This episode is powered by Act Now Education. Go to www.actnoweducation.com for free comprehensive educational resources and opportunities for active duty, veterans, military spouses, and children.
The transition was rough. It was rough. I had a new job. I was going in customers' homes, getting disrespected, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Like, this isn't the world I'm used to.
Warriors, fall in. It's time for formation. Today I'm joined with a fellow Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner who also served in the United States Marine Corps, and just like me, today's guest spent some time in combat while in Iraq. Today's guest now owns his own gym outside of Chicago in Elmhurst, Illinois. Over time, he's been involved with BJJ, also known as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Our guest today also secured mixed martial art victories with a record of 7-0. I had the opportunity to know and train with our guest when I also trained Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Chicago at the Uflacker Academy, when he was just a purple belt looking to climb the ranks and make a name for himself. So I'm very proud to have Professor Anthony Farrow on today's podcast to talk about his time in the Marine Corps, his combat experiences, and his career transition out of the military, which involved some PTSD. And he also learned how the mixed martial arts community could help him better discover more to life. Professor Farrow, it is an absolute honor to have you on the Morning Formation podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Dude, it's hard to believe that it's been over 10 years since I trained there in Chicago, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Time just flies so fast, and I want to give a shout-out to Professor Christian Uflacker, because I know he's kind of brought you along, right, and helped you.
I've been there ever since. I've been there since, good Lord, 09?
Jeez. Yeah.
That's a long time. Yeah, that's a long time. I try to stay, he's a good guy. I stay loyal. And been a long 10 years since we trained together. Wow, that's long.
I know, right?
He has a purple belt, and that was awful. Well, just scrappy. Didn't know anything.
I tell you what, man, I was very impressed with that school, very impressed with the academy, the folks that trained there. I know there was a lot of law enforcement that trained there as well, a lot of military folks that trained there. So it was a very impressive academy. And it's great to see that you had grown your own school as well out there in Elmhurst, Illinois. And I understand you're starting your second school. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it was still my first school, but I moved into my third location. I've been open 4 years, wow. But this is third location already. It's just bigger. We've outgrown every gym, and that's a good problem to have, but it's also stress, and you got to move into new places.
Hey, man. Yeah, it's growing. It's growing, and you're actually changing a lot of lives. I think that's incredible, man. So let's get into it, man. Let's talk about, where are you from, Anthony, and why did you decide to join the Marine Corps over all other branches?
Yeah. So I'm from Alsip, Palos Heights, south suburbs of Chicago. Why I went in the Marines instead was because I was going, I wasn't headed in the best direction after I did like a year of college, gave up, and just, I didn't really have any hobbies. Jiu-Jitsu wasn't around at the time. I loved martial arts. I was taking Hapkido, but it's not nearly the same type of, workout and stuff like that. I chose the Marines because I wanted the toughest one. I wanted the hardest one. I wanted to change my whole life around. And I did. Sure did. But I wanted the challenge. I needed a change.
So was the military familiar territory for you and your family, or was you kind of an outlier?
Yeah, nobody that I know of served. I think I had maybe a cousin served a long time ago or something. I don't remember, but no, nobody served. It was very foreign for all of us. It was very different.
Right. So you have a lot of courage, first of all, to just walk into the dark and join the military, having no one else to kind of relate to what you're about to go through. You leave and you go active duty Marines. Where's your first duty station?
Lejeune. That was my only duty station. I trained on the West Coast though, but they shipped me off to East Coast Lejeune the whole time there.
All right. And so, how many years did you do in the Marine Corps? And talk to us about your first deployment in combat.
I did four active, four inactive, so just eight total that we'd have to do. I went to Iraq in 05 and 06, so 2 years out of the 4 years I've been in. So I was deployed more than I was on base. I was in the fleet for about 5 or 6 months before we shipped out. So we spent a lot of that time training. I was motor T, so I learned as much about trucks as we could and how to drive and stuff like that. But then we went to Iraq in February to September, and our station was in Fallujah, and the war of Fallujah was in late 04 to 05. So we got there right after the grunts and everybody just tore that place up. It was very violent. I mean, you could tell when they were leaving, just we had brand new camis on and they just looked like, I mean, you could tell they lost a lot of people and were tired and just done. But yeah, then we were stuck for Fallujah there for 7 months, and I somehow became the lead machine gunner of the convoys in front of my lieutenant. And it's a lot of crazy stuff. A lot of crazy stuff happened that 7 months. But I got out of there somehow. I got out of there somehow. So it was a lot. It was 7 months straight of Groundhog Day. You know, you wake up, you do the same exact thing. You don't see clouds in the sky. It's just hot, and that's it. You're just hot for 24 hours. For about 6 months out of the 7 months, I was just hot.
I feel you, man. I was located up in Mosul, Iraq, in 2004, 2005. And my cousin was one of the Blackwater guys that was actually ambushed and was drugged through the streets. His name's Wesley Batalona. So Fallujah is fairly near and dear to my heart. And some of the things that happened there as well. I was there right around the same time as you. So in convoy, I was a transportation officer. So convoy was something I was very, very familiar with. Now, when you deployed, how old were you and what rank were you?
I was older. I mean, when I deployed, I was 23. When I went in the Marines, I was 22. So I was kind of older than a lot of the 18-year-olds right after high school. I was 23 on my first deployment. So I was a Lance. I got out of boot camp as a PFC because I got the college credits for it because I did not want to be a private after. I wanted to, like, if I was going for this, I knew this was going to be my life or not. It was going to direct me towards my life. You can't mess up in the military. You know, like, I wanted as much rank as I could get. I did my research before I went in. That's all I did. So I was a Lance Corporal.
Right on. That's still fairly young. 23 years old, your first deployment. And how many deployments did you do total?
Two, back to back. We were back home for 3 months, and then we went right back.
And the second time, still Fallujah?
See, this was TQ. I can't pronounce it, but we called it TQ. And then it was really rough. We got sent to Ramadi for a month for like a secret mission with the army. That was bad. It was, Ramadi was not good at that time. I mean, Ramadi was never good, but it was rough at that time. But we were there already. That's all we knew. We didn't know anything else.
Right.
We didn't have time to get used to being home in the civilian world again. We were just right back in the desert, in the sand, doing what we did 3 months prior for 7 months. Our attitudes were completely different too. I mean, the second time we were just, you know, we knew it all already. A lot of our lieutenants and stuff, that was their first time over there. And we were like, hey, we know what combat is, like, easy there.
Right.
So we were like, you know, we were belligerent. We were, it's war, you know, or whatever. It was war time.
Right. And so did you get an opportunity to talk to anyone that was actually in Iraq in that area before they went in and cleaned out Fallujah?
No.
So I did. Like when I was in Mosul, there was a couple of guys that were from the, from 82nd. There were a couple of first lieutenants that were there the year prior to Fallujah getting taken over by us. And, they said it was a completely different world back then. They would actually go out into town in soft skin Humvees and make local purchases. And when I was there, you know, same time as you, like there was no way in hell you would go outside the wire without, you know, sandbags on the floor, ghetto metal on the side of your vehicles, or eventually we got the level 3 TARDAC stuff.
Yeah.
The Oshkosh stuff, but it's pretty wild. I felt like every year that went by, Iraq would change, and it wouldn't be the same as it was the year before. Did you experience the same the second time you went to Iraq?
Oh man, man, it's hard to even remember. It was just we were in different areas.
Yeah,
but still, like, we were still getting more of the same, and if not more, the longer we stayed there. You know, they were sick of us being there.
Right.
You know, so to me, not really, because I think it was just such a quick transition.
Yeah, it was 3 months, right?
It was the same. It was 3-4 months. So it was the same bullshit that it was before. It was, you know, not the best times. It was ugly a lot of times.
So you come back from your second deployment and you get out of the Marines shortly thereafter that. What was that transition like? Did you already know what you were going to be doing, like when you got out of the uniform?
Yeah, my brother-in-law, luckily, he worked for Comcast Cable Company, and I moved back to Illinois 2 months later at a job interview, and I was hired on spot. So I had that stress. I was like, hell yeah, I got a job. But it was just an awful job, and I was in an awful state of mind without knowing. And I did that awfulness for close to 8 years, and that made my PTSD get really bad. And at the time, I didn't know I had PTSD, or I refused to believe it that I had PTSD. Yeah. The transition was rough. It was rough. I had a new job. I was going in customers' homes, getting disrespected. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? Like, this isn't the world I'm used to. I'm like, do you know where I just been? Like, I don't want to be like that. But at the time, I was like, these people are screaming at me because of a cable line. I'm like, I should have been dead 50 times. Like, are you really complaining about a cable line like this? Or, that transition stuff for me was tough.
Yeah. And I can tell you that, I don't know if you felt the same way, but when I transitioned out, I just wanted to be left alone. Like, I wanted to get out. I wanted to check all the blocks and just not go through any of the out processing stuff at all. And I feel the way that you felt, where I came back from Iraq and I had people who were sitting back here watching TV telling me what was going on and telling me what it was like, right? You experienced the same?
The best. When they say, you know, why, what's in Iraq, why you went to Iraq, what's in Iraq.
Right.
I'm like, oh, because you read it online. Okay. I mean, I wasn't there or anything, so what would I know?
Right.
A lot of ignorance, and I wasn't used to it. And now it's just times a thousand, but what I got out. But I never realized that I had a lot of people hate me because I was in the military. I didn't know people actually saw that stuff or like hated people in the military because they think we're all killers and stuff. Like, wow, you don't know anything about anything.
Right. Right. And you know, that's one of the main reasons I started this podcast was because anytime I ever heard about military veterans or what, you know, veterans were doing, I always heard about the drug addict or the alcoholic, or it's not the guys that are out there like you that are building businesses, changing lives. It's always about the negative stuff, man. Right. And so, you know, I got tired of hearing it. I got tired of hearing it because I know there's a lot of guys out here that are killing it and are making it and are overcoming all the obstacles between these two different cultures of the civilian world versus the military world, right? And so, you know, I really appreciate guys like you that are just so courageous, strong, brave. You know, you're out there changing. Anyone that you've trained over the years, Anthony, you know, you've literally positively changed their life. And having trained jiu-jitsu for the last 11 years or so, man, it's that's how I have felt about it. And I have a lot of respect for what you do specifically. So at what point, though, you know, you took Hapkido back in the day. At what point did you find yourself back on the mats again? And what were you doing?
So I know exactly where I was at. I was getting into, I loved watching UFC, loved watching Pride. That's when Pride was getting huge. I loved, my favorite fighter was Chuck Liddell. I remember watching him in Iraq knock out Bob Ballou, I think twice. I was so involved in it. I'm like, man, I would love to like try something like this. I always wanted to do jiu-jitsu because of Hoist Gracie, though. This was like in the beginning of the military where I was studying jiu-jitsu, like reading books on the Gracies, but I couldn't afford jiu-jitsu. That's when it just started coming around right before I joined the military. Only school was in like a city, and it was like, I couldn't do that. I was young. I didn't have the money. So after my first deployment, again, we didn't have much time to transition, but after the second deployment, I knew my mental health was getting kind of weird. And, you know, we would lift. It didn't matter if we got no sleep. We went to the gym right away to get that anger out. I was lifting a ton of weight, and that's why I'm probably hurt, because I lifted so much heavy weight for being so small. But, you know, that's what we did. You know, that's what all we had to do was fun and recreational. So when we went to Ramadi, like I brought up earlier, when we got stationed out there, they had a gym with mats. And we were with reservists at the time. And we had about 10 reservists in my platoon, which those guys are trips. But we had a blue belt, which was like the almighty blue belt. That's how stuff changed, right? Like, right. This guy was a blue belt. He was a god. I'm like, oh my God, you're a blue belt? Like, how? So we went to the gym. He started showing us a few arm bars and triangles. And he's like, all right, go grapple with this Marine. And I remember, I didn't know what the hell it was. And instantly I get a triangle on the guy. And I just, after that, I freaked out. Like, I loved it. I choked somebody out with my legs after learning jiu-jitsu for like 15 minutes. Because I think reading all the books helps, having long legs. And the guy that I triangled actually lives in Illinois. And he's a Marine. He lives in Illinois, and he's one of my buddies. That's funny. But he was the first guy that got triangled by me. But, yeah, that was in Ramadi. And after that, that was it. When we got back home, signed up at the closest jiu-jitsu, more of an MMA school. And that was the time when Brian Stann was coming up in the WEC. Mm-hmm. He was captain. Like I read his book, Marine Captain. He's been through a lot of shit. You know,
he's a Silver Star recipient, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been through a lot. It's crazy. But I saw how he trained, and he would talk to me, you know, as a person, because he was a officer. So it's weird to see them outside of work. But he had no one to train with, so you would just see all these big Marines come in there and try to beat this guy up, and he would just knock their heads off. That's how he was training to get in the WEC, and then he got out, and then he went in the UFC after that. But that's where I started. And I was good at kicks. I started doing some stand up, and it just took a long. I've been through so much of getting my butt kicked in the beginning, like, and tears because I would just get my ass beat sparring because I never did it something like that before. I got collar choked. The guy was laughing at me as I was getting collar choked. I had a girl choke the shit out of me, unconscious almost.
Oh yeah.
And she was like clapping and shouting. That made it awesome. So yeah, that was my beginning of my jiu-jitsu journey. And I remember going every day. I just had to show up once and that was it. I went every day. And the longest time from that day that I've taken off jiu-jitsu was probably from my knee surgery last year. I took off probably like 6 weeks straight. Possibly. I've had blood clots where I couldn't train for 3 months, but I still did, kind of. And Christian had to drag me off the mats because he's like, stop, you're training too hard. If you get hit in the head, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm obsessed with it because it's so good for mental health and it's never ending. And self-defense is always the biggest thing, right? I mean, we all should know that, but it is my mental health.
Right.
And now I just like helping people. Like I love, there's a lot of people that could go far in this sport and they could do far in their lives. It's just, you have to get through it. This sport can take you there. It really can. It's just not easy. It takes dedication.
Yeah. And it's very family oriented, man. I remember when I was training there and most gyms that I've been to has had that format and that overall environment where you develop a family. And I know it at the Uflacker Academy, and I'm sure it's the same thing at your academy as well, where you literally become a family. You guys train together and you fight together, you compete together. You know, so I think that there's a lot to be said about that as well. And I can tell you that personally, I'm the same boat as you, man. Whenever I was in a dark place, I would just find the gym and train. Because you have two choices, right? You can go to the bar, you can go to the pubs or go to the clubs and drink, or you can go find some exercise somewhere and find some camaraderie, which is what we're used to in the military. And you can find that on the mats, man. And so, you know, I've been meaning to get you on the show for a while, and I'm really happy that I got you on the show because a lot of things you're saying, I resonate with. I totally understand where you're coming from with that. And I just want to back it up real quick and talk about some of the failures that you had while you were in uniform. And I think it's important because a lot of folks think that you have to be perfect, that you have to be perfect to be a success. You have to be perfect. And in my opinion, I've had a lot of failures myself and had to overcome obstacles and pick myself back up again, dust myself off and keep going. So would you mind talking about some of those failures that you had and how you found the strength to overcome? And was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu part of that?
At the end, I don't know if I looked at it as that doing Jiu-Jitsu about failure. Because at that time, I had maybe 8 months left. And I wasn't thinking of that at the time. But I felt like my whole military career, I failed so many times just from the beginning. Because I didn't have that experience of knowing anyone that was in the military. I lost my dad early. I had nobody to show me all this manly stuff. I get thrown in the Marine Corps and I'm failing at making a tent. I'm failing at shooting properly. You know, I failed a lot of shit. But all I could do, and I kind of tell people this in jiu-jitsu, I could do is just keep going and try to get better, or I could stop and just quit. But the military doesn't let you do that. I mean, you can. It's just you're not going to get far after that. They'll kick you out. You'll just be a turd. You know what I mean? But I failed a lot in my attitude, I would say. I always had something to say. I always spoke up, which was a good thing, but it was also a bad thing. So I had to work on how I would say stuff. Especially coming from the civilian world and how I talk to people. There's just a lot of failure, a lot of the stuff that I just couldn't do that a lot of these kids were doing. I was like, why can't I do that? I can't even put that in properly. I just changed his tire wrong. Like, I'm sure people know how to change tires 20 times better than I did when they went in, you know? So I felt like I failed a lot until I hit like corporal, as when I was like, okay, it's time to, I have to take more of a leadership role anyway. I tried to as a Lance Corporal too, but, so yeah, that's a, I failed at adapting at first, you know, but all you can do is keep going. And that's it. And that's what I did. I kept working on it. And I guess all that failure to end it good was doing jiu-jitsu. So I didn't feel like such a failure. And then going through two deployments, I don't know. I don't even know how I felt, like if you're supposed to feel anything. I'm trying to think, like, if I felt like I was I was a failure at that point. But, you know, that's all we kind of knew. I didn't really know anything else at that point. That's how I kind of got over them. Just keep doing them.
Yeah. So you lost your dad at a young age. So you grew up sort of having to figure out on your own how to become a man. Yeah. And then you joined the Marines. And that's diving into the deep end in itself. I'm sure boot camp was a complete slap in the face for you.
Awful. It was awful.
And it takes a lot of courage, man. It takes a lot of courage to do what you did. And the things that you're talking about right now are things that have to do with, you know, cutting your teeth in life. And I really believe that there's no better place than the military to do that, to cut your teeth and learn, get mentored by others, fail, get back up again. And it's funny because today I was working with a 26-year-old young man, and we were doing push-ups. And, you know, even at my age, at 42 years old, I can still do, you know, 55 push-ups in like a minute, right? And, you know, that's just how we are, I think, because this kid I was working with didn't quite understand, like, the idea of clearing the bar and, like, every day get up, like, knock out as many push-ups as you can before you go to the restroom. Like, that's what I do, and that's what most of us in the military do, right? And I really feel like people who serve get it. You know, overcome the odds, pushing yourself beyond your boundaries and things like that. And that's something that sounds like definitely you learned how to do, and that's why it was sort of an easy transition for you to get onto the mats and start training and pushing yourself. And you sort of found a family there. And I know you were training with Professor Christian Uflacker for years, but at what point, Anthony, did you decide that it was time to open your own gym?
So after the whole Comcast thing, it was like 7-8 years in, and I was going through a divorce at the time. I was in school full time. I was working full time, and I was still fighting MMA. So I was doing it. I juggle, and my life was chaotic. I had no time, but that's, I kept myself so busy. I just had to keep myself busy. Because once I stop being busy, you have all those thoughts coming in and all of that stuff. So at the end of that, I was starting to get out of Comcast. I couldn't take it anymore. And then the PTSD started like overflowing, and I started actually seeing like therapists and stuff like that. So I just was like, I'm done with Comcast. So I got called. Someone I used to know a long time ago that would run gyms, and they're like, do you want to be a trainer at like a UFC gym? I was like, hell yeah, it's awesome. UFC gym. And, you know, you think of the money and how sad it is, how much money you make, but you have to start somewhere. Holy cow. And I had to do something. And I'm like, why don't I try this and see how I go? I mean, I was a brown belt at the time. So I didn't even teach jiu-jitsu there. I was just a kickboxing guy. And I ran it like boot camp, and I killed so many people in good ways. They loved me there because I related so much with, oh, you want to lose weight? I got you. Oh, you want to get in shape? I got you. Trust me. Like, I know how to get your asses in shape. And I was very intense, and I still am to this day. And a lot of it has to do with the military. A lot of the kids do not have the drive that we had. Not at all. Right. So once I started, I asked to teach jujitsu. It was like 6-7 months in. I was like, I should probably teach jujitsu. I'm a brown belt. So we just started doing no-gi, and all of a sudden I just started getting like a few people that started really liking it, and they stopped doing kickboxing a little bit, and they wanted to do jiu-jitsu. Like a month later, the classes are growing and growing. I'm like, what the hell? So now we're getting regulars, like in my jiu-jitsu classes. We started like twice a week and three times a week. So I think we were doing jiu-jitsu for almost 6-7 months, and me, I wanted to start a gi program. Everyone's like, no, we're not going to do gi. Who the heck's going to do gi? You know, this is UFC gym. We're all MMA fighters here. you MMA fighters, you're not supposed to train in the gi, which is such horseshit, by the way, too. Because as many times all your world champions train in the gi. Mm-hmm. Up until their fights. But again, you get... I don't know what today's generation, what they're watching or what they're thinking, but yeah, so that's how the jiu-jitsu guys were. We were training the damn gi still. We would do all of that stuff. So when I started the gi program there, everyone was talking like, okay, it's not going to work. And like the first class, we had like 7, 8, 9, 10 people or something in the gi. I was like, holy shit, people bought gis, they bought belts. Because I'm thinking promotions, I'm thinking future. Like the belt, yes, it goes around your waist, but that belt shows it's a degree. It's like a college degree, right? Because you're there forever. Like, if you're not doing gi, I'm sorry, I don't buy the whole belt thing. So that's what jiu-jitsu is. It's Brazilian jiu-jitsu for a reason. You put in 10, 12 years, you're going to know a lot of knowledge. You don't have to be a world champion. Right. You don't have to be any of that. You just have to know how to be a good teacher if that's what you want to do. And I started loving teaching and seeing my students compete from a UFC gym and beating people from legit schools. I'm like, maybe I do know what I'm talking about. And I didn't at the time compared to what I know now. I mean, I'm going to say this in 3 years from now. But I grew to about 20, 30 people were coming to my classes. I had a student be like, hey, I'll give you this much money. Open your school. I believe in you. Let's do it. And I had no money. We jumped. And that was it. You know, it sucked that I had to take the people away from that gym. But, you know, I still have most of them that came with me 4 years ago with me to this day.
Wow.
They're still with me to this day. My OGs, I call them.
That's some dedication for sure, man. And you know, over the years, who are some of the folks that you've had the opportunity to train with? And the reason I ask that is because I remember being a brand new blue belt. Professor Uflacher gave me my blue belt. I remember watching you guys, and it was kind of mesmerizing to see you guys just spar each other because you guys are preparing for fights and everything, man. You guys were killing each other. Who are some of the folks that you've had the liberty to train with, man, over the years?
Oh man, to this day, I wish some of the MMA fighters would train the way we trained. You don't see that a lot anymore. You would see us. You saw us beat the living daylights out of each other. Yeah. Six 5 minute rounds. It didn't matter if you were pro or amateur. You're doing 6 5-minute rounds. So me, I got to train with Christian Uflacher, which was awful when he was training for fights. The BBs, I've trained with a few of the BBs, Carson Beebe, back in the day, who was a decent pro fighter. Rob Menegas, he made it in the pro ranks, but he doesn't fight anymore. Gideon Ray, who is, man, he got me ready for my fights. Just amazing, very talented.
What makes the Faro Academy different than other schools in the greater Chicago area, in your opinion?
If you give me 100%, I'm giving you 100%. So that's my job anyway, is to make you good at jiu-jitsu, to make you happy. I just talked to the class today. I'm like, think about it as I want you guys to love it as much. I wish I could get you guys to love it as much as I do, because I'm obsessed with it. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But that is my goal. My goal is to make everyone know what to do on the streets, to keep my police officers safe on the streets and know what to do, keep the veterans safe mentally. But I could only do it if you put in the work, you know. But that's kind of how I'm different in the academy, because I push, but it's good for competitors and it's good for, we have an 87-year-old man that comes to class twice a week.
Wow.
So, yeah, it doesn't matter, you know. So that's what's different, you know. I don't sugarcoat stuff.
Yeah, I think a lot of that goes back to your upbringing as well. You know, you lost your father at a very young age. Think about how many young folks are at your academy that you're leaving an impression upon, teaching them the things that you had to learn. You're by yourself joining the military. You're teaching them. I'm sure you have a lot of teenagers that are showing up, and a lot of parents that are hobbyists as well. I think maybe some of the things that you do and the reasons why you run it the way that you do is sort of because of the way you were brought up and how you had to learn things on your own, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. No, I want people to learn, and I want them to get something when they're there. You know, they're supporting me. I got to do my job. You got to work. You know, you got to work hard.
Yeah. I really miss Chicago and having academies like yours and UFLACers. And I tell you what, that was the beginning of my training, was when I was there in Chicago. And since then, I really haven't experienced another academy similar to what Professor UFLACer ran. And I haven't experienced the same type of training family that he had there as well, like with folks like you. At some point in time, man, I'd like to stop by and drop in and, you know, bring my gi. So,
anytime. I love it. I love when people come to visit and train. I love doing seminars. I just want people to learn. I want to teach. I want to keep getting better, and I have to get better to get you better. That's how I look at it.
Everything is so exciting for you. And I remember, you know, when I trained there in Chicago, it was a very formidable time for me specifically. And for you and your academy, what do you have coming over the horizon? What's in store for you competition-wise, or what's in store for your business?
I'm trying to build the kids' classes, which is doing a very good job. My goal is to add more classes, to maybe teach like an MMA class, just like striking. Once a week with jujitsu, because a lot of us don't know what to do if we're stuck on our backs in a street scenario, how to block a punch type stuff. I'm just trying to grow. Me, as far as competing, I think I'm going to do two more this year. I've been competing almost twice a month since January. I'm tired. I just love it. But I think I'm taking November, December off to try to look at some seminars. So I'll still be traveling. Hopefully I got a seminar set in California actually for November, December, if they're in SoCal. So I'm working on the specifics yet. So I'll know more when that comes out. So I have one lined up so far. And then next year I want to try to get on the Pan Ams. I want to get at the Nationals and the Worlds, and let's see what I could do against the big leagues. I mean, then, you know, same thing I did this year, but I'm going to add a few more big events in there. And I want some of my students to be on the podiums at these big events, because I believe I could teach any of them to make it up there, because I believe in my jiu-jitsu and I believe in my teaching at this point, because I nonstop study.
Even scheduling this interview, man, like, you had so much going on. I appreciate you being so flexible, and we're doing this at night, and I know you just got done teaching your classes, man. So you also mentioned too that you're planning on writing a book.
Yes, so I've been wanting to do this for a while. I'm in the middle of I'm just doing, like, I'm getting all my thoughts down. I'm going from my childhood to where I'm at now. So that's something to look out for the, probably in the next 6 months. Something should be coming out soon. And I've had an interesting life, but it's more of just helping people, because I don't want people, good people, to suffer. Like I suffered a lot. Silence suffered, and I don't want people to silence suffer. I've been where I was living in basements in my car and stuff like that. So, and you know, to have a strong positive mindset, don't be weak minded. And like I said, I'm very brutally honest. If someone's being lazy, I'm going to tell them they're being lazy. And I'm like, if you don't do anything about it, life's not going to be easier. It really isn't. I believe in the hard work, and that's all I try to throw on to people. And don't use your mental health as an excuse. Like me using PTSD is, oh, I can't do that. I can't train. I can't do that. I have PTSD. No, you're just using it. Don't take advantage of it. Use it to fuel you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's what I'm trying to tell people, because I see a lot of the younger people, they don't understand it yet. You know, I'm not saying they don't struggle, but at the same time, we came up in different times.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you overcame a lot yourself. You had to figure it out on your own. And now you are sort of a father figure for a lot of the folks, the teens that train with you right now, who may have the same situation as what you had growing up. So that's tremendous in itself. Where do you think you'd be today if you didn't have MMA or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in your life?
I don't know. I always say I don't think I'd be here. I don't know. I wasn't in a good place. I can't really imagine my life without it. So I don't think anything good would be out of it. I'd probably just be working a dead-end job and not be happy, but I couldn't do that. I can't even see. Because I was in baseball in the beginning of my life, and then I had to do, I just feel worthless if I don't do something. I couldn't not do it. Right. That's all I could say. So I don't know. I don't know where I'd be. Maybe I'd be a psychiatrist.
You know, man, it's sort of a hook in itself. I mean, I did a session this morning with some folks from work. We got on the mats and we rolled around, did some no-gi. And afterwards, man, I feel so much better. I mean, so much better. I can start my day, feel really strong, more awake, more alive, starting out my day like that. And the guys that I train with and have a tremendous amount of respect for them. So, I really wanted to underline your story and your background because of how important Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and mixed martial arts has been for me over the years when I was in my darkest hour, how it saved me from getting into that mental potential PTSD depression stage. It kept me out of there, and I've had friends for life that I've met on the mats, man. And with the anyone out there, you know, I know that you have started a YouTube channel and you're on some social media platforms, but anyone out there, any listeners who might be struggling to find themselves or would need some advice, you know, what advice would you like to provide them that we didn't mention here on the show so far?
You just, no matter what you go through, you've got to go through it. Like, there's always going to be light at the end of the tunnel. You could have a bad day, or you could have a bad week, you could have a bad month. But and you could bitch, you could complain. That's fine. I do it. Anxiety gets bad all the time. But you know what? Eventually, you're going to understand why you're going through it. And you just have to do it. Like, don't say you're going to do something. Just do it, and things fall into place. I guess the biggest thing to get out of it, trust yourself. Believe in yourself a little bit. You can be hard on yourself, but believe in yourself. You have to. If you don't believe in yourself, who's going to believe in yourself? No one's going to believe in you. You have to believe in yourself. So that's something that people need to get. You know, that's what I did. Why I started my YouTube, to get awareness out for veterans. And now I do weekly videos for jiu-jitsu, but I still, you know, podcasts like this, I like putting up on my YouTube because it's a different change and people need to hear this stuff. And if it helps one person out of 100, it helps one person.
Yep.
That's kind of see it.
Yeah. It's well said. Well said. And speaking of which, if anyone out there is seeking to connect with you, what's the best way for them to find you? Like, what social media platforms are you on?
Instagram, I'm on mainly. It's Sickness81. My YouTube is SicknessFerro, F-E-R-R-O. And then Facebook, just my name, Anthony, S-I-K-N-E-S-S-Ferro on Facebook. But usually Instagram, that's how I built my business. A lot of it is social media. That's how. It's not easy. I'm constantly on my phone and then people are like, oh, I'm constantly posting stuff. I got to shout my sponsors out because they help. You got to help out everybody that helps you out. And I have so much help that I try to help out 50 people at night. So my day doesn't even, like, I know it's, I don't know what time it is. It's 11:36 here. I still have a lot of stuff I got to do tonight. Yeah, a lot of stuff I got to do. I got to prepare videos. I got to do ads. You know, you got to respond to emails. You got to respond to texts. You got people. You got to keep it. You got to keep up. You know, social media is huge. And if used in a positive way, and I use that platform to get some of my stress out. When I get annoyed by something I see on the news too, to help get it out. But, it's mainly for jiu-jitsu and, you know, awareness is huge. You know, people don't know certain things until you might read something someone has to say, and like facts, you got to understand facts. And that's a lot of people don't know facts anymore. It's just like hearsay. Right. So I believe in social media used as a good thing too.
Yeah, you are, man. You're killing it. And, I highly appreciate, you know, talking to veterans like you who are out there overcoming the obstacles, no excuses. You're out there not just making it for yourself, but you're also bringing everyone else up too, by having your academy and, you know, being a mentor for so many folks out there. So thank you for the time. I know it's extremely late for you, but thank you for the time and the flexibility for having this interview. I appreciate it, Professor Ferro. And then for everyone else out there, thank you for tuning in. As always, I want you to stay tuned. Stay focused and stay motivated. Warriors, fall out. You've been listening to the Morning Formation Podcast. I hope you found today's materials helpful and of value to your current situation. You can connect with me on Instagram at the_morning_formation_podcast, or you can connect with me via email at theformationpodcaster@gmail.com. Also, I would like to thank my partners at Act Now Education for their support. Authenticity, community, and trusted is what you can expect from all members of the Act Now Education team. You can link up with them today and learn about some new free educational resources on their Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or at their website, actnoweducation.com. Whether today's show took you back to a nostalgic time or helped you think about tomorrow, thank you for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you again. Stay safe and stay motivated. Warriors, fall out.